From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning. Welcome to Loose on the Lead, live from Saratoga on this Sunday morning, the day after Saturday's Alabama. We are live from Clare Court on a nice morning up here. Sun is shining. Still a little humid, but there's a really nice breeze this morning. I am live on set, but live from Southern California. He was been at Del Mar this week with the radio show and the Pacific Classic yesterday. My Loose on the Lead partner, Steve Bick. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Happy to have you on board, and we will talk a little Pacific Classic specifically in a moment. We'll watch the replay and whatnot, but first just give us a little update. Yesterday here at Saratoga, I'm going to pull up the recap, 35,802. Watched a great day of racing here at Saratoga yesterday, and again, we'll talk also specifically about the Alabama and Malathat in a moment, but give us the overview out on the West Coast. What was Pacific Classic Day like?
Well, it's hard for me to judge in terms of crowd size. I have to go by some of the people I was with, particularly Rick Hammerly, and it seemed subdued to a great extent. I was out here for the Breeders' Cup, and that was a different scenario. It was not crowded. I mean, they actually were expecting only about 15,000, and I think they had a little less than that. But in part, it is because they don't have the staffing to be able to handle their full-size crowd. And they had kind of a dry run for their opening day. Opening day at Del Mar is like a holiday in San Diego. Yeah. And they even tamped that down this year. So I don't think they had the kind of atmosphere. It was like just a really nice, robust day at a racetrack. It's funny. It's a facility that is deceptive. It has lots of nooks and crannies. It's great for the Breeders' Cup because there's all kinds of little entertainment places and seating and parterre box kind of things and the overlooking of the paddock. There's lots of nice amenity areas for Del Mar, but it isn't like a vast expanse. They didn't open the infield either. So you had a smallish crowd. There was not a big energy vibe, but it was certainly fun to be there. There was outstanding racing. The card was spectacular. And you had some really fun moments and emotional moments, most notably the Del Mar Mile repeat by Mo Forza. And, of course, the late Barry Abrams, not just one of my favorite racetrackers and horsemen, but literally a favorite of everyone, not just in Southern California. I mean, literally coast to coast in harness racing and then thoroughbred racing, Barry beloved. And Mo Forza's win was, in a lot of ways, the highlight of the day. And widow Diane there, his brother David, and maybe 50 people set off a huge celebration. Mo Forza, probably among the best turf horses in training right now. That was the best part of the day for me. Although Tripoli, I was all over Tripoli for the Pacific Classic. That was a tremendous performance. And Diego Pereira with a absolute brilliant ride. Pereira comes into the undertaking 2 for 60 or so. And it was his only mount of the day. Unbelievable. And another Pacific Classic win for Costa Hironis and John Sadler. This is like, what, their fourth? Or who can keep track? Accelerate, a higher power, and now Tripoli. Fun day. And then you had the $50 winner of the Nightcap, Astronaut, for John Sheriffs. That was a great story and win, Victor Espinoza. It was just a terrific day all around.
Very good. And let's talk specifically about some of those races and up here as well. Get your opinions. And I will congratulate you. You know, on your website, you had selections looking at both tracks, Saratoga and Del Mar, and you had Tripoli on top. You gave out a nice ticket for the cross-country pick five, so congratulations on a nice day yesterday. But one of those winners you gave out was Malathat. I also like Malathat. I had Clairiere underneath. I thought Clairiere ran well. We'll watch the entire race here because it is notable that Malathat, the number six horse, stumbles a little bit at the start, has to overcome that, but does. And at the top of the stretch, she again asserts herself as the leader of the three-year-old filly division, rebounding off of the Ding Dong second-place finish in the Coaching Club American Oaks. Nice win for John Velasquez and Todd Pletcher with Malathat. And again, she's going to be the number six horse as we watch here. Clairiere comes up late in the stretch, the number three horse to run second. Army Wife runs third in here. Maracuja, a little bit disappointing, winding up last in the field of seven after the win in the Coaching Club American Oaks. But we're watching him now kind of going into the back stretch with number five, Played Hard, who you had mentioned yesterday. And given the early fractions, you said you're thinking this horse could be a little bit intriguing. And given the early fractions, I thought, oh, maybe this horse is going to keep going. Eventually, she winds up getting passed, though, and it is Malathat. As I said, when they come to the top of the stretch, she will establish herself again as the leader of the three-year-old filly division in a convincing way. What were your thoughts yesterday on the Alabama?
Well, you had to know coming in that she was going to be that much fitter into this undertaking than she was coming into the Oaks. And that was something that I think Todd Pletcher had indicated. You know, he didn't want to essentially wring the lemon dry, too soon. I think that the fitness level for her in the Oaks kind of caught, I think, Todd by surprise a little bit. So she was obviously tighter for this. She was a no doubt about it winner. And you could see that when she, essentially moved at will into the turn and tip over and Johnny just, basically guided her home. This was a big win for Hillendale and Stone Street with Clairiere second, because of course, Curlin, the sire of Malathat and Stone Street having bred Malathat. So they essentially finished first and second here in one way or another, having bred really the exacta, Curlin exacta. And it actually was a great day for Hillendale Farm as it was across the country with the Kitten's Joy son of Tripoli winning that Pacific Classic. But listen, Malathat is your three-year-old champion. I think something would have to really go awry between now and the end of the year. One thing though that is just preposterous is this carrying on. Let's face the boys. Make her face the. Shut up with that. Just stop. It's just preposterous. I mean, she got a 95 buyer. She'd be, if you ran her in the Traverse, she'd be sixth. It's just idiotic. It's a nice filly. Let her be a nice filly. Stop with this. Face the boys. Jesus.
It was a really nice race, though, yesterday. Yeah, you're right. You get the Kentucky Oaks and the Alabama. It's going to be hard to overcome her as we progress through the rest of the year. We'll see how it plays out. But now let's go over and take a look. We'll have the stretch run of the Pacific Classic. As I say, good pick by you, putting Tripoli on top for a $15 winner. Tripoli will be the number one horse. Dr. Post. Trevor Denman said going into the far turn, kind of spinning his wheels. Dr. Post, as we watch the horses turning into the stretch, is the number three, way on the outside, just left himself too much to do, and wound up a good third given the position going into the turn. But as we're watching, Tripoli takes the lead here. As you said, the jockey, I believe his first grade one win for Sadler and Hieronis Racing. A number of now recent Pacific Classic wins. Jay Pribman noted that in his column as well. But again, good call by you. And we were talking off the air, and I mentioned it on the Handicappers Report. Now after three dirt starts, two dirt wins, including the Pacific Classic, after having started the career on turf, Tripoli, maybe the new cigar.
Well, there's a lot going on here, and I talked to John Sadler, Jay, you mentioned Jay Pribman, Jay recovering from cancer surgery and getting, you know, his strength back. And we sat in the winner's circle afterward and talked about this really interesting scenario. And Sadler brought up the point that this is a horse that when you're at Santa Anita, they can't train on the turf course. So after an extended period of watching Tripoli all year, all winter, and into the summer, train at Santa Anita on the dirt, started to think, you know what, he's getting over it very nicely. And he saw him, you know, looking more and more comfortable. So he said, let's try him on the dirt. He's out of a Tappet mare. And next thing you know, you got a horse, haven't seen the figure yet, but it looks like he'll have three straight triple digit buyers going into the fall. And don't know yet if they're going to go straight to the Breeders' Cup Classic and train up. He's not a big horse, and we'll see if he runs in the Awesome again. But it's a great story. Costa Aronis and the Aronis brothers, some of my favorite owners, really anywhere in the game. And, you know, Sadler's been a little quiet. So this is a big win. And to me, it was obvious that you had an emergent horse that with even if he ran a similar kind of race, was going to be a contender. He drew inside. You might note that he had drawn the, I think he was the 8 of 9 last time, and in the San Diego, where he split two of the favorites in this race. So why wouldn't you think that Tripoli, you know, had a live shot in here? And then Pereira, who really had struggled this summer. I mean, when I printed the PPs, I think on Wednesday night, he was 1 for 56, I think. And he got another win subsequently after that earlier in the week. But terrific win for Pereira. I thought he gave a brilliant ride. You talk about Dr. Post, and Dr. Post's performance is a little deceptive in here. And it's not spinning his wheels is probably a good description, because this is a deep, tiring racetrack. The Southern California circuit, you know, the safety concerns, I don't personally subscribe to the slower is safer concept, but these tracks, Santa Anita and Del Mar in particular, are very, very heavy. And so, you know, 202 and 1 for the mile and a quarter, that's a good time in here. So I think you're going to see a big figure, and this is an emergent horse that heads toward Breeders' Cup with a big mile and a quarter win in his pocket. I thought it was a very satisfying feature race. Dr. Post, don't misjudge that effort. It was okay. Tis a Magician ran very well. I had Mandela Thursday on the show in the tribute to B. Wayne Hughes. And Tis a Magician doesn't have much speed, but he plugs away. And I thought he ran very well. And chances are you'll see him for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So this was a very good race as we start to, you know, think about the handicap division and the feature on Breeders' Cup weekend.
Yeah, the move to the dirt obviously paying off in a big way yesterday in the Pacific Classic. Steve, got to wrap things up, but any final comments, and also give us the update on the radio schedule coming up. I know sometime this week you're also heading out to Vegas for the NHC that comes up next weekend.
Well, we'll be in Vegas for Tuesday, and we'll just do regular shows probably Tuesday and Wednesday. The first chance, last chance contest is Thursday, and then the NHC starts on Friday, and we'll do about, you know, 4 hours plus, 4.5 hours of bonus coverage Friday, then into, you know, Saturday and Sunday, probably about 5 hours on the stream at the website at stevebick.com. And looking forward to it. We go to Vegas tomorrow. I'll do a recap show from Del Mar tomorrow, which should be terrific, with Sadler and Peter Miller and everybody else. At least one other race to mention. Forbidden Kingdom and Kamui and Rhetoric. If you have not seen the fourth race from yesterday, this was a 5.5 furlong maiden special, three first-time starters, these are three serious two-year-olds. There was some bumping and grinding, and there was a kind of a weirdish disqualification of Kamui back behind his stablemate Rhetoric. Be sure to check out the fourth race yesterday. Catch a replay of the maiden special. Those are serious horses. Mo Forza, I already talked to you about. And Tripoli we got. And then who are we missing? Oh, Going Global, the D'Amato. He wins the Del Mar Oaks, the grade one. She was very good. Fluffy Socks, you know, ran okay, kind of ran an even race there. And then you had the $50 winner, Astronaut, who the quality rode for John O'Connor. And Mr. O'Connor, nice to see him get a big time graded stake win. That race, actually, Vic Stauffer won the Del Mar Betting Challenge.
Oh.
And he's doing pretty. It's one of the reasons on Thoroughgraph, Astronaut was an emerging horse. And I know Vic keyed Astronaut to win the betting challenge yesterday. So everything I did yesterday successfully came off of Thoroughgraph myself. So everything you need to win.
Nice. As I said, you had that cross-country pick five ticket. You had Tripoli in the mix, so congratulations on a good day.
Not in the mix. That was, he was on top.
You had Astronaut in the mix. You had the $50 horse in the mix, but you're right. You had Tripoli on top. Yeah, no, that is worth parsing out correctly. Steve, appreciate the visit. Next week, we'll get you live from Vegas via Zoom as well for post-Travers comments and also a little comment going into the last day of the handicapping contest. Looking forward to that and checking you out on the radio all week long as well. Stay safe, travel safe, say hello to Tina. We'll talk again.
I appreciate it. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Steve Bick live from Del Mar. We'll take a break live on the set. Joining me in just a moment, Matt Haggerty from the DRF. Every year we get him in to talk a little Jockey Club Roundtable. We'll talk a little bit about that and much, much more right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Capital OTV is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTV TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTV live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTV TV. OTV TV on Roku. Try it now.
Stone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two arch rivals head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead on a Sunday morning. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum, the hard news reporter for the Racing Forum, right? Correct?
Yeah,
good morning.
Yeah, that's probably the best description for it, sure. Yeah.
And we get you in typically every year up here at Saratoga to talk a little Jockey Club Roundtable. Also this past week it was the Albany Law Racing Symposium, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. That was live. The Roundtable is still via Zoom, am I correct?
Yeah, that was a live stream, although it wasn't live. All the presentations were taped and they just ran it. They started it at the time that the roundtable would normally be held at 10 o'clock on on the second Sunday in August.
And then Albany Law, there were actually people over.
Yeah,
there.
Albany Law was in place over at actually at the 1863 Club here for the first time.
Oh, was it really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because
yeah.
So usually I got to both are over at the Gideon,
yeah.
right?
Yes, usually? Normally, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. And folks may wonder about the round table, but like a lot of people, as the summers progress, people forget how late changes were made. There have been things so far this year that didn't get back to normal. People are like, why? And really, New York didn't. It was well into June when kind of we were still at maybe 70% up here, and then it was late June or early July where it kind of went to 100%. So something like the round table, people have to make flight reservations and get the hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and they pack you in there too. Yeah. I mean, there's no if you did 6 foot of distance or whatever the recommendation is now, you know, you'd be able to fit about 40 people in there. I think they did the right thing. They did the safe thing. And then, like you said, the only problem for me is that a lot of times when I come up here, I get to kind of shake a lot of hands to the people that come to the round table and at least, you know, reintroduce myself and say hello in person. And this year there really wasn't that because you had most of those people just staying home.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of the subject matter. And you're looking at your articles in the Daily Racing Form, and again, Matt covering the news side of the game, and you can pick up his articles, obviously, in the hard copy, but these days, DRF.com as well. And looking at your articles on both the Roundtable and the Racing Law, they both covered the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act and maybe Sunday to Monday Roundtable to the Law Symposium, maybe some different opinions on HISA.
Yeah, obviously, the Jockey Club, big supporter of the legislation that created HISA. So they were very... They were very encouraged by the progress it's made so far. They are still solidly behind the effort, which will have an effective date of July 1st next year. There's a lot of heavy lifting to be done between now and then. They acknowledge that, and they also made a strong plea from three different speakers. Look, we need 100% of people behind this, and unfortunately, they don't have 100% of people behind it. There are two lawsuits, one in Texas and one in Kentucky, that is seeking to invalidate the legislation, and they have a lot of work to do, and they may have some significant legal challenges down the road.
Yeah, one of the smaller venues was kind of like, well, this is going to put us out of business, the cost side of things.
Yeah, and so they have not taken those cost estimates public yet. I have had some discussions in which they have people at racing commissions and horsemen's groups have been told that at least the cost of testing per test is somewhere going to be around 7 to 8 times what they are currently paying for right now. Now, some of these smaller jurisdictions don't do a lot of expensive testing, so it might be 7 or 8 times what they do, whereas California might be twice as much. It's going to hit people's budgets pretty hard. But also, they're talking about not doing as much testing as we currently do. We currently test about 250,000 horses a year. When you put that into relation with the United States Olympic team, including all their, you know, all the trial teams and everything like that, you saw it in 2020. You know, I did look this up the other day. They did a total of 5,200 tests in 2020, compared to 250,000 in the racing industry alone. But we also test every winter. And then we test normally 2 to 3 horses other than that in each race. Some jurisdictions are going to more targeted testing programs. They're seeing some, you know, some benefits from that as far as cost benefits, but we'll have to see if the racing industry can adopt a testing protocol like that in which the vast majority of winners aren't being tested.
Interesting. And for folks who don't know, you mentioned USADA, and we're making the comparison there. They're going to be the folks that will be in charge of this program as well.
Yeah, they'll enforce the drug testing and the medication protocol program. Now, it sounds like state racing commissions will be the agents on the ground to do all that work, but it will be USADA who is designing and making sure that everyone is in line with the program that they want to have in place.
And
they don't come cheap.
Yeah, and reading your article, talking about some of the major venues and getting an opinion from NYRA, it sounded like David O'Rourke at one point got up in favor and was kind of like, hey, I think we all got to rally around this.
Yeah, so you do have this situation just the next day after the roundtable. There's this gaming and racing law conference, which is put on by some pretty smart folks, and Bennett Liebman, who everyone knows. He's probably the foremost racing law expert in the United States.
Local.
And a local, and a local, and a really good guy, too. brought up the point that he thinks that the Supreme Court and other courts might consider this principle behind it, which is delegation of powers, to be ripe for review, that the Supreme Court might be looking for a case to decide this issue once and for all, or not once and for all, but in the current context of the political climate. So his opinion was that if this, if these due lawsuits continue to go forward, the Supreme Court might be itching for it to come to it.
And I was talking to some of the people that are involved in this earlier in the meet. I ran into some people over on the front side. And as you say, it goes into effect about a year away in July, but there is a lot of heavy lifting in between. And this sounds like there's the potential to throw a real monkey wrench into things, unfortunately, in the meantime.
Yeah. If you're a supporter, I think you have to be a little cautious about whether or not that program will be in place on July 1st. They talked about having the new rules and regulations ready to distribute to the industry by the fall. They have to have it in front of the FTC by January 1st if they want to get the full approvals. I've been covering the industry for whatever it is, 27 years. It doesn't move that fast. Yeah. It never has. There are some very professional people behind this. Charles Sheeler, former lead counsel to Senator George Mitchell, very smart guy, very industrious guy. So maybe they can pull it off, but the industry's track record does not augur well for being able to turn this around.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing. They have to have some things in place by kind of the end of the year.
Exactly.
And then things, so we'll see how it works out, you know, knock wood, because I think, is this the perfect solution? No, but I think the industry does kind of need something to bring together the rules as opposed to kind of the patchwork situation state by state we have now.
It's silly to keep it, to keep explaining it. It's silly to keep saying, oh, well, you know, now the rules aren't as far apart as everyone might think they are. They're pretty close, but it's silly. It's silly to keep saying it, and the industry's been trying for two decades to nationalize the regulations, and they've never been able to do it. So I don't know what the other answer is at this point.
Yeah, so we'll see how that all plays out. Looking at some of the other things you've been covering recently in the racing forum, the one that jumped out to me, speaking of New York and NYRA, they have once again put a little bit of a restriction on the computer-aided wagering outfits, and I found that very intriguing.
Yeah, so we did report this week that they shut off the CAW players as of 3 minutes to post, only in the win pool. So is there going to be a big impact now? The numbers show that the win pool is down about 12% since the July 28th restriction, and I'm sorry, I thought I turned this off, but
you're not the only one.
Yeah. So the
it's a common.
So it does show that the numbers are down 12% in the win pool. You know, is it having any impact on the odds that players are seeing? There was a horse yesterday.
We were talking before we went on the air. This is really interesting because I think you hit on something here.
Yeah. So there was a horse yesterday in the last race. It came off the turf. It was a main track only.
I want to say Perfect Grace.
Perfect Grace, yes. Perfect Grace, who shall live in infamy. And he should have been 1-5 easily. He was sitting on the board at 4-5 until the 3-minute mark, and the CEWs apparently aren't playing the win pool anymore. That horse stayed at 4-5. There is no doubt in my mind that the computers would have at the last second hit this to at least 2-5. There was no reason for this horse to be 4-5. It was a giveaway to bettors. In a race like that where you have a main track only who's got the only good dirt track form, that's a 2-5 horse at the best. So I think it is actually having an impact, and some bettors, I don't know, to name one or two, may have benefited from that yesterday.
and you know, that they made the decision on the win pool. They've also earlier had made decision on some of the pick bets as well.
Yeah, so when you're playing the Empire Pick 6, which is just the regular Pick 6, and the Cross-Country Pick 5 and the Late Pick 5, those are all CAW free pools. So, you know, NYRA, Oakland Park, I believe, is still saying they blocked CAWs completely.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There were some other tracks that blocked them sporadically, but they've all fallen by the wayside. So you do have these pools here up at NYRA to play without them in it, and then Oakland Park.
And for people who don't know what a CAW is, there are some bettors that plug directly into the parimutuel pool. They have computer programs that are analyzing and figuring things out, and a lot of folks think they play into the late odds shifts you see because they can at a split second before the gate opens, make that move that to take advantage of those kind of odds that are just a little askew.
Yeah, just like yesterday in a 5-horse field, it was the last horse or last race on the card after the Alabama. It came off the turf. There wasn't a whole lot of people playing it. Their computer program is determining what the ideal odds should be well before post time. Then they take a look at all the distributions in the win pool. The algorithm spits out a bet to get to their ideal price, which would have easily been 2 or 1 to 5, and they'll hit it to that price. And then anyone who was stuck saying 4 to 5 is an awesome price on this horse and then got 1 to 5 when the gates open. Yeah. You know, you can understand where you're cutting your price in 3 times.
And hats off to Naira for doing that kind of a very customer friendly thing and restricting that in some fashion in some of the pools. Another thing I wanted to talk about, speaking of Naira and the events that happened last weekend, Dave O'Rourke was speaking also, and I've read a few interviews from him this summer. Talking about how he thinks tying in with sports betting is going to be beneficial for the horse racing game.
Yeah. I think David O'Rourke, and we've seen this strategy play out in the pandemic. Anyone who was on TV, anyone who was associated with a strong brand during the pandemic, they saw enormous gains in handle during the pandemic. Those gains continue to go forward, and David O'Rourke puts it pretty bluntly. If you look at all these companies that are trying to get into the sports gambling marketplace and the ad spend and the marketing spend they are going through right now to get people onto their customer roles, you may as well jump on the wagon. And so those people did during the pandemic turn their players onto horse racing. Who knows how many of them are still horse racing bettors? But all the people that I talked to was saying during the pandemic that no, these are new guys. These are people that have never played horse racing before. So make sure that you're at least a button on their site says, would you like to play horse racing? Here's how you do it real easily.
Yeah. And talk about it from the news side and look as a guy who kind of crunches the numbers and whatnot. I have said it almost since the beginning of the pandemic when those 4 tracks were still racing. A couple of smaller tracks, Tampa and Gulfstream, kept things going. The Fox show fired back up. New York was on the sidelines for a little while. But then when New York came back with the Fox show, I think as compared to some of the other pro sports, I think horse racing did a very good job through the pandemic the last year and a half. And I think, again, we pulled in some new fans.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I talk with the people that run all the ADWs really frequently, and especially at TVG. They know that FanDuel sent 50,000 new bettors their way. and that was just like in the summer when there weren't, sports, when there weren't sports back up. But then at the end of the year, we saw organic growth. It was real organic growth in the amount of money bet on racing at a time when races were down. So there was obviously new money out there.
Yeah, and I think the handle here is reflecting that.
Oh, yeah. They're up 20% in 2 years.
The handle here is crazy. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to touch on, you mentioned recently in articles, and I'm going to be interested to see when it happens and what the results are and if other people pick it up, but Monmouth is looking at instituting fixed odds wagering.
Yeah, the regulations are going a little slow. I did talk to Dennis Drazen, who's the head of the group that operates Monmouth Park, a little earlier this week. They think they can at least get it up and running once they get the temporary regs approved by the Division of Gaming Enforcement and the Racing Commission. Whether or not that will happen before the end of the Monmouth meet is unknown. Once they do have the regulations, though, they will take anybody's signal who wants fixed odds, and I know Naira wants in, and they will start offering fixed odds to New Jersey residents on those races, alongside, obviously, the parimutuel pool. So David O'Rourke, another guy who we've been talking about, but he's very bullish on this. He also likes the idea that New Jersey is just one jurisdiction, that it's small, because it's going to be kind of a test case to see what the response is for this. Now, if you remember, exchange wagering was a flop in New Jersey. It just could not get up the liquidity to make that market work. So it still remains to be seen as to what market there is for fixed odds in parimutuels. I like the parimutuel system. I don't like late changes like everyone else, but the parimutuel system is pretty efficient, and if you're experienced in the game, it's also fun to find out those inefficiencies. You can also do that with fixed odds, but those guys are going to be like the computer algorithms. They're going to have a number that looks like the last number.
And I know Tom Amello, our former colleague here, has talked about looking at the tote board and making decisions there, and that's a benefit of parimutuel wagering, using the collective mindset of folks. But as you say, you can look for the inefficiencies. Fixed odds sounds good, but yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what happens in New Jersey. And aren't they working on like an Australian model?
Yeah, and so BetMakers, who is going to be in charge of that, they are going to be basically just facilitating the customer to the fixed odds provider. So there will be a menu, there should be an array for every signal, which is what you need out there. If you have one fixed odds provider, it's going to be way more inefficient than a parimutuel pool. The takeout will end up being around 30-40%. And then you have to remember how parimutuel markets work now. If you are betting a horse that's 10 to 1 with 5 minutes to post, that horse is probably going to drift. It's probably going to go to 12, you know, barring, you know, some late money. So remember, you can place a fixed odds bet that is going to be a lower price than what you get in a parimutuel pool.
Yeah, and as they say, it's an interesting concept, but I'm going to be very intrigued to see how it works. Matt, before we let you go, I said when I talked to you yesterday, I also get some opinion because you're a player and love your opinion on a couple of the races, a couple of the female horses we've seen over the past couple of weeks. And so I'm going to go back to last week and get your opinion on one of the better. And again, I'm thrilled that folks have been here this year. Last year, there were big performances. Tis the Law, Swiss Skydiver, and there was nobody here. But this year, we had a couple of big performances over the last 7 or 8 days that folks were able to watch. And going back to the four-star day, folks are saying, yeah, I've got Stormy. Is she a little over the hill? We're going to watch the stretch run to the four-star day. I've got Stormy going to be the number six horse. She was super impressive here. Clearly likes this race, having won it 2 years ago, a good second last year behind the runaway front-running Halliday. But last week, got Stormy, gets it done. The number six horse coming down the stretch under Tyler Gaffleone. What were your thoughts on the mare?
So I did not use Got Stormy except in the second and third places in all my exotics. I, like a lot of people, thought that this this field was a little too strong, and she might be kind of cresting in her career. But I will tell you this: when they get to the top of the stretch, I started rooting for her. She's just a great horse. She's a neat horse. I knew I wasn't going to be able to cash anything at this point, seeing how strong she was, and it's neat. I don't know what it is for me, but I do like the mares. I do like the fillies, and she's just a neat horse. And I was at the track the next day, and I was saving a tabletop at the paddock bar for my friends before they got over. And this woman, elderly woman, asked to sit down so she could eat, and we just started chatting. And she said, "Oh, you know, my horse won yesterday." And I said, "Is your horse Got Stormy?" And she said, "Yeah." She's one of 5,400 people that that own the horse.
My
racehorse.
Yeah. Yeah, so and it was great. Super sporting that they brought the horse back this year.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. And then, you know, unfortunately, you have B. Wayne Hughes dying this week.
And you wrote about that, too. Maybe I should have you comment on that a little bit. For people who aren't familiar. I mean, one of the pillars of the game, and had some of the great horses under, you know, his ownership. Into Mischief, that kind of stands out.
Well, the thing we're bringing it up is just because of the MyRacehorse.com, which he was a big supporter of. It's brought a ton of people into the game who feel like,
well, the woman, yes, owns a little bit of business. She had the winner.
Yeah, she owned a hair on Got Stormy. And she actually asked me, she said, what do you think about these partnerships? And I said, I think they're great. I think no one, you know, once you put up your whatever they charge you, don't ever expect to get another dollar. Yeah. You know, you're basically just buying a meaningless title, but it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend who works for My Racehorse. They organize tours, you know, on the backstretch. They can't accommodate everyone, but they, you know, hold lotteries. And I think it's a neat concept because I have never owned a horse. My father did own some very cheap claimers at Turf Paradise for about 6 months, which is as long as he could afford it. And he still says that was the greatest 6 months of his life. We had a horse, Little Fanny Annie, who came back from at Turf Paradise, 26 lengths back at the half mile pole to win.
The forego of Turf Paradise.
Little Fanny Annie. Yeah,
very good. And that's a great story with the woman. Hey, I owned the winner of the stakes race yesterday.
Yeah.
Let's get an opinion on yesterday in Malathat, you know, after the gut buster and the ding dong battle in the coaching club American Oaks. The question mark was, could she come back and affirm her leadership of the 3-year-old Philly division as they turned into the top of the stretch. That became clear. I've liked Clarier throughout the year. I put Malathat over Clarier. I thought Clarier ran very well to get up for second, Army Wife third. But yeah, Malathat looking pretty good yesterday in the
Alabama. And you know, I thought Malathat's last race in the Oaks was just one of those bizarre races.
Yeah.
It's not her running style. You know, she has to turn a bunch of people back. She looks good here. This is a weird track. It doesn't look like it too much on the video. But it did rain for about 45 minutes before this race. They sealed it, and then they cut it up like three times.
Yeah.
So you didn't know how this track was going to play. Obviously, it played slow, at least early. So I thought this is a really good race, and Malathat is a very, very nice filly. Yeah. You know, there's no way she's not champion at this point, barring some...
Kentucky Oaks and the Alabama.
I don't know how she loses it, but she's obviously a nice filly, and that CCA Oaks was just bizarre, just throw it out from her career.
I asked John Velasquez, I interviewed him the day before, and said, would you rather have a bigger field or a smaller field? Because I think people think, oh, smaller field is probably easier. But he's like, nah, because funky things happen when you get down to four or three horses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, every handicapper knows when you have, you know, an eight-horse field, the dynamics play out more like a real race than if you have a four-horse field. Yeah. You just get screwy dynamics in those small fields.
Yeah, and I think we saw that play out perfectly, Coaching Club American Oaks versus the Alabama yesterday. Yeah. Matt, always appreciate the visit. Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum. Again, you can check out his work regularly, drf.com, but appreciate the visit this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right, we will take a break when we come back. Again, last week, before he left town, taped a little interview with Steve Bick. We will show part of that as we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrill live here. Steve Bick earlier via Zoom out at Del Mar. But since he was going to Del Mar, I thought, you know what? Maybe we'll do a little Steve Bick feature, which we haven't ever done. I mean, I've occasionally asked him about some things. But longtime now host of the SiriusXM radio show At the Races. He runs horses under the DT stable. He has that Derby Trail forum that he's had for years on the internet. And so people are familiar with Steve and the various things he does in the industry, but I thought it'd be fun to interview and kind of get a little background on how he got into the game and got involved in the racing ownership, got into the radio show. And so we planted a couple of chairs back here last Sunday after the show and talked to Steve, and it was an extended conversation. So we actually have a couple of parts, but we'll show part one this morning. So again, an interview with my usual co-host, out of town this week, but interviewed last week, Steve Bick, and some of his background in the racing game. Joined now by my friend and Loose on the Lead co-host Steve Bick. I thought I would do a little Ralph Edwards. Steve Bick, this is your life. Welcome.
Is my second grade teacher.
That's right. From behind the
Mrs.
curtain.
Sadler.
Steve, maybe you don't remember me.
What do you mean? I still have bruises.
It won't be that in depth, but I did think it'd be fun to bring you back and talk a little bit about how you got into the game, the genesis of the radio show and whatnot. And so let's start with that. I know, like you, like me, you didn't have family that was involved or big racing fans, and so you got involved a little later. I had a buddy in high school that was a fan of racing, so we'd sit in study hall and look at the entries in the newspaper and the results the next day. How did you become involved in the game?
I've got probably multiple stages of involvement and interest. My grandfather took me as a kid to Aqueduct. I've told this story many times, and Joe Namath was in like a box either next to us or behind us, and he knew my grandfather, you know, by sight, but that I thought was incredibly cool. I must have been 10 or 11. And that's my first memory, and like everybody else, you know, watching Triple Crown races on television. But then out of college, my friend Phil Melnick, he ended up working as a stockbroker at First Jersey Securities. And in what will come full circle, I don't know if you know where this is heading, but of course John Parada was running the racing interests for Bob Brennan at First Jersey. Well, First Jersey would bring the brokers, they were down in D.C., in the D.C. office, they would bring them up to Garden State Park, and Phil became a big racing fan, started to have parties for Preakness. They'd start with breakfast at his condo, and then we would all bus up, there'd be like 30 of us, we'd bus up to Pimlico, have a great day at Pimlico, come back, and then I would actually make the barbecue dinner,
of course,
at the condo. So that, you know, that really kind of got the ball rolling, and from that point, Phil and I started going regularly to big events, including Belmont. And by the time I moved from Cincinnati to Kansas City to Charlotte, back to the Northeast, then to Montreal, starting to come to Saratoga every weekend, essentially, at least, you know, 4 weeks out of the six, when I lived in the 90s in Montreal. And when I had to leave Canada after 10 years, I thought, where can I go? And my parents were in Hartford, and I had business, you know, I had to stay close to Montreal, that's where my business was. So I thought, you know what, I could live in the Saratoga area. And I ended up in Washington County in Greenwich. And a bunch of things happened from that point that are just, so serendipitous, it's hard to believe.
You talked about your previous business, and you've always been involved in the food service, right?
Started in food I started technically with Procter & Gamble out of college, or almost out of college, and they put me in the food service division. So restaurants and hotels and so forth. Coming here and coming regularly to the racetrack, I got friendly with the guys that ran Carolina Barbecue, Barry Fry and Bill Mayberry. They started seeing me on a regular basis almost every day in 99. And that was my first year in the area. So we started to get friendly, and they said, what do you do? Well, I'm a food broker. They said, can you help us get our sandwiches into convenience stores and such? I said, yeah, I probably could. And so we started working together. And that fall, because I wanted to see what, you know, the inner workings were like, I joined them at the Gulfstream Breeders' Cup. And I really enjoyed it. I had always, you know, from the time I got involved in food service, I had always thought that I'd like to have my own restaurant at some point. And this was, you know, kind of a no-risk side of it, you know, that I could basically run a restaurant for 6 weeks up here at Saratoga, because Bill actually had a heart attack and missed a season, and Barry said, can you run the installation at the Carousel? So I said, yeah, I would do that. I'm going to beat the track every day anyway. So that really got me entrenched and went to my first Derby with them in 2001. And really from there, things, you know, just cascaded. You know, running that little cafe across from the carousel was, something that really changed the course of my life, because I started to gain a kind of a following with owners and with trainers, and I had set up a kind of a captain's table off to the side, and next thing I knew, I really found myself immersed in the game. I started the online website. I started a club, Derby Trail, and you couldn't write it up, Seth. The way things unfolded from that point, but it all ties back to my food service interests and Carolina barbecue, because we had created an atmosphere back there. You would hang out. There was nothing like what we had there. And even though there's still great pockets and groups that stake out the, certainly the Paul Matisse, the Purple Tablecloth Corner, the Matisse Clan, that's a great, but having the food service installation made it, particularly special. Our friends Donnie and Lori Tessitore, and Donnie and I would put on these Sunday spreads, these Sunday buffets, with Donnie's great cooking. And people tell me, we're gone a number of years now from the backside, from the backyard, and people say how much they miss it, especially you, because you didn't have to pay.
Well, you didn't have to add that.
Everybody knows. Everybody knew that. That was a foregone conclusion.
I do miss it, though. I will readily admit to that. I want to get back to that in a second, but you mentioned the Derby Trail Forum. And for folks who don't remember, I think Twitter, unfortunately, shut down a lot of these forums. For folks who don't remember, kind of in the early days of the Internet, I remember I was on the old Genie GE logon system back with the squawking modems and whatnot. But the forums were a great way for people like me who didn't have family or friends who were necessarily interested to get on and talk about horse racing. And back in the day, there was big outlets at them. There was a forum at Del Mar, Naira had a forum, Blood Horse had a forum. There was the Final Turn, Thoroughbred Champions, and you, Derby Trail, were amongst
Pace Advantage,
the Pace Advantage, you're right, were among the first. And you're still out there, and it was a great way. It was fun to interact with racing fans and whatnot, talk about starting the Derby Trail, and Derby Trail is still up and running.
Yeah, and we've kind of, like most of the forums, they kind of peaked and then, settled into, a core group of people that stay and hang and talk the game. I started the concept, I started on Yahoo. They had those sports groups or any kind of group. And I called it Derby Trail, and basically was doing some handicapping and writing some quasi, featurettes, and being around the horsemen and such, and my background at Colgate, was sports journalism too. I wrote for the Maroon and was the editor, sports editor of the Maroon, and broadcast Colgate hockey and a little football and talk show concerning sports, Sunday nights, 7 to 8, with Steve Beck. And the first year I did it, basically 2002, War Emblems year, had maybe 50, there were like 50 people that found it. The old ESPN message board was sort of a conduit, and some of the people from the ESPN board, then joined Derby Trail, because I sort of cross-posted. And, my handicapping was solid, and I got a bit of a following from that. And I had at that point, and having been now living in the area for 3 years, really had some designs on turf writing in particular. I hadn't even thought about the broadcasting side at all. I tried to you know, tried to reach out to various industry trades. DR Steve Grabowski was very nice to me, and I was able to write a couple of closer looks for, you know, with Steve. Steve Haskin got me some bylines in Bloodhorse. I had seen that he had joined that Derby Trail Yahoo Club. And so I wrote to him, and he was very nice to me and really was instrumental. And I must have had half a dozen bylines at Bloodhorse during that 2003-04 period. But then every year that I was doing Derby Trail, it would double in size. It went from 50 to 100, 100 to 200. And that included a guy by the name of Gus Alonzo. And Gus was, in 2005, he was friendly with Joe Gracie, who had latched on through John Parada. That's why this whole thing with First Jersey Securities and Parada has a amazing circuit to it. They had started the show on Sirius, and Gus was doing the handicapping for the first like 3 months, but then was moving. So he wrote me an email and said, I recommended you to do the handicapping on this show on Sirius. I said, you know, at first I thought it was a gag. And he said, so I wrote back and he said, yeah, Joe's going to call you. JJ is going to call you. And next thing I know, I landed, you know, I was going to be the Friday handicapper and come up with some play. And that got me onto the show. That was in November of 05. And the funny part about it, I asked JJ, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, Gus usually does a pick four. I had never played a pick four in my life. I wasn't even really a doubles player. I was an exacta player. And I said, all right. So it was Aqueduct. So the first time I'm on the show, I gave out a $36 pick four ticket that hits for $700. And Seth, I proceeded to go on a run. I mean, it was nuts. It was actually strange. I mean, I just could not miss. And at the same time, my mother was sick with breast cancer and down in Boynton Beach. So she wanted to have Thanksgiving down there instead of at home in Hartford. So, all right, so I'm going to go down to Boynton. So I said to JJ and John Parada, I said, you know, I'm going to be in the area for Thanksgiving. I'd love to come in and meet everybody face to face. All right, so I come in, did the show live. And after one sit-down show, John said, do you want to be co-host? I said, yes, I do. And even though, I mean, it took 2 years and no pay. I mean, there was no money involved. The show wasn't making money. Yeah. And John was in his pocket. He would pay when we went to Derby and Preakness. He'd pay some expenses. But I didn't make anything for 2 years, over 2 years. And eventually JJ moved on. And John said, if you want to go on with the show, it's yours. And I did. And because I had wanted to do that out of college, but when I left Colgate in 82, and you've got to relate to this because you were at Syracuse and same kinds of idea, I got offers for $8,500 a year salary to work in Buffalo and I think $9,500 to work in Utica. How do you tell your parents they just spent $30,000 on your education? 4 years, now that's what it cost you for 1 year. How do I tell them I'm going to take a job for $8,500? So I moved to it. I didn't do it. I went into sales and marketing. But that eventually got me this opportunity. It was crazy.
We'll hit more on the radio and whatnot, but I want to go back to the barbecue as well. And For folks you've already said it, a lot of folks fondly remember and miss it, me being one of those. For folks who don't remember, just remind them. As you say, it was out by the carousel. It was a separate place, but it had, for lack of a better term, kind of a back porch with tables there.
Oh, yeah.
You, for a while, you broadcast the radio show from back there.
Well, yeah.
But there was also the cadre of folks who had their picnic tables around who were regulars as well. It was just an incredible atmosphere. And as you said, horse people were back there as well. One of the big notables, Bobby Frankel, was a regular.
Well, and Bobby did not like sitting in the clubhouse and being, frankly, annoyed by people. He was prickly, as everybody knows. But Gary Siaka, by that point, I'd gotten very friendly with Gary. And that was through Barry Fry, one of the partners. Barry and I are still partners on food projects. His niece was hot walking and wanting to, she went to the University of Arizona racetrack industry program, Lori Fry, and she hot walked for Gary. So Gary would come to the stand. So he and I became friendly, and that's how Gary ended up training for us with DT. We started DT with Chuck Simon. But Gary and Bobby were close friends. And so he started bringing Bobby to the barbecue. And Bobby loved it. I mean, he could sit there quietly, and it was nice and cool, too. You know, the clubhouse could be hot and stuffy on a summer day. So it was out in the trees, and I'd make him, if it wasn't something from the hot from the barbecue, including the year that we had the Montreal smoked meat, which he absolutely loved. I would pick out the most lean, beautiful cuts of smoked meat, and he loved that. But I also, I would make I'd make egg salad, tuna salad, and shrimp salad, and that was like off the menu, and so, people could come and they'd sit. Nick Zito, I'd always have a melon. I was getting the melons in the morning from BJ Farms. It was a whole scene there. Certain people from Naira staff would come and hang, and it was special. And like you said, the radio show at that time was 4 to 7. So by the time we were done, the racing was kind of, the race day in terms of the barbecue was winding down. And, 4 to 7, I would sit there and do the show. It was very cool. I could grab horsemen to and from as they were walking from the backstretch. They were walking from the Oklahoma. They'd walk right past us. So I'd wave them in, and they'd sit down before the race or after the race sometimes. Made for a great atmosphere, and it had that throwback feel with the clanking of the pots and pans in the background and the chatter, the low chatter of people hanging around. It was tremendous. The side table, a great story. A Travers Day, actually, and Bobby spent the whole Travers Day sitting with us in the back, and my parents came up, and so at some point. Things had wound down a little bit. We weren't that busy at the stand. So I sat down, my parents were there, and I'm near the end of the table, and my mother's next to me, and Bobby's next to her. And Bobby was a big man. He was not small little Jewish guy. He was a sizable guy. So he's sitting there kind of towering over my mother. And so we're handicapping, and she, at one point, the race is coming up, and she goes, "Ooh, Bobby Frankel has 2 in this race." And my friend turns to my mother and says, "Mrs. Bick, you're sitting next to him." And she looks up at Bobby. He goes, "Really?" And Bobby looks down, "Yeah." I will never forget. That was my father who was sitting across. My father knew it was Bobby, but there were people that would come sit down, and they had no idea who they were sitting. That was the beauty of the thing.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back. Yeah, the fun, that was part one. We have a little bit more of the Steve Bick interview because it went on for a while. He meeting Tina in the backyard at his wife at the backyard behind the barbecue and more. We'll probably drop that in next week because Steve, again, will be out of town. But I just thought that would be fun to let people know the background and how Steve got into it and got into the radio show and whatnot. So hopefully you like that. A little bit earlier, our friend Matt Haggerty stopped by. We appreciate him stopping by to give us a little update on the Jockey Club Roundtable and also the Albany Law Racing Symposium and more with Matt. Appreciate that. And top of the show, Steve Bick live via Zoom out at Del Mar. Don't forget, you can listen to the radio show. I think he has, what, a couple more days out in Southern California. And he said he's headed to Vegas on Tuesday with the National Handicapping Championship. We had a great time. We had a blast out there going back to 2019, 2020. It was really just before the pandemic in 2020. We were out in Vegas for the NHC, which is typically in a February, March spot on the calendar. But this year with the pandemic, they moved it to Travers weekend. And obviously Travers weekend means we're here. We're happy to be here. So we're going to miss it, but he's going to be out there doing the radio show. But again, fun going out there. It's a great time out in Vegas, and it's described by the people who show up as like a horse players convention, and it is a lot of fun. And Steve does a great job on the radio side, which kind of pulled us into going out and doing the TV coverage, as I say, the past couple of years, 2019 2020, maybe next year, because they will be back in that same spot, you know, barring anything changing up, but back in that same kind of February March spot next year. So hopefully we'll get back out there, but this year, it was kind of postponed from the early part of the year to Travers weekend. So Steve will be out covering it. And as I say, you can listen to his radio coverage. But we'll have him via Zoom with a little recap probably next Sunday as well. My friend Kim Weir just walked by and said hello. And I'm glad she did, because it reminded me that Tuesday night, we always like to tout the TRF fundraisers that happen up here, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And there is a barbecue coming up on Tuesday, summer night barbecue at the barn. That will happen at the Saratoga Winery. It's really just outside of town on Route 29, at 5 minutes out down Route 29. It's going to happen Tuesday night, August 24th, from 5 to 9 p.m. A lot of people may be thinking, I'm going to see James Taylor that night, but show up at 5. You can get your barbecue and head on over. I am listed as one of the racing celebrities. There will be some folks that you will be familiar with out there that you can chat with and have some fun with, as well as a very good barbecue, some food, some music, basket raffles, be able to see some of the TRF horses as well. Tickets are $45. You can visit TRF, Inc., TRFINC.org to order your ticket for Tuesday night. Again, benefiting the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Summer night barbecue at the barn, out at the Saratoga Winery this Tuesday from 5 until 9 p.m. I'm going to wrap it up. Let me remind you that at the Clubhouse Racebook, there is a Naira Match Bet promotion. And there's a Naira Pick 4 and a Match Bet. That's how it goes. Naira Pick 4 and a Match Bet down at the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon if you want to make your venue for watching the races down there. I will also have a show pool bankroll. I think there's probably still a little time to put your name in the hat to get potentially selected for the show pool bankroll coming up a little bit later on. Don't forget as well, today the syndicate, Saratoga Syndicate, for next Saturday opens up. Check the website if you would like to play in the Saratoga Syndicate for next Saturday, Travers Day. That should be a lot of fun as well. Again, check the website today. First come, first serve for the syndicate, CapitalOTB.com. I will again remind you, if you're coming to the track, try the Low Rollers contest. It's a lot of fun, and as I say, if you're not a contest player, it's a fun way to kind of get introduced to contests, and we all year long at Capital OTB do the tourney bets contest, so it may pull you into that side of the game, which, as I say, always is a lot of fun and makes you kind of tweak your handicapping a little bit. I think it helps your handicapping. So the Low Rollers contest over on the front side this afternoon. Go to the 4-Star Dave area, and that's where you get to register for the Low Rollers contest up here at the track every Thursday and Sunday. All right, I'm Seth Merrill. One more reminder that you can vote for favorite TV personality at the America's Best Racing website. It closes today. Once again, I thank everybody who already has voted. Been sitting in the top 10 since the voting started amongst some national juggernauts. So to see Capital OTB in there has been kind of fun. And again, if you don't have a chance to write down the URL there, go to my website, equidaily.com. You can go to the ABAR website. I just thought it was a little hard to find. But go to CapitalOTB.com. I have a link right up at the top of the page. Love to have you vote before it closes a little bit later on today. And again, appreciate everybody who has voted. Thanks. And I got a lot of people over on the front side yesterday, as they say, walking around the track or giving me a thumbs up. Voted for you. I voted for you. So thanks to everybody who did cast a vote. Really appreciate it. All right, we will wrap things up for this Sunday edition of Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrow in the studio. Steve Bick was live at the top of the show via Zoom. And we're running late, so I'm going to wrap it up. And pregame show at Nairobi coming up shortly. A great day of racing with a nice day. I guess we have some weather potentially coming in over the next few days, or not over the next day or so. I thought Tuesday looked pretty good. But we may get some weather a little bit towards end of the day this evening and into tomorrow, maybe, up the coast. And Monmouth closed, right? I'm just talking into my ear now. Didn't you guys announce that Monmouth is closed? And, yeah, Ellis closed, too, I'm being reminded. They had a fire at Ellis in one of the barns, and that closed things up. The word was that horses and people escaped without injury. If you see the video, very lucky. But Ellis closed, Monmouth closed today. But Saratoga is open with some great racing. We are off the turf, however, today, 4, 8, and 10 here at Saratoga. So adjust your handicapping accordingly. All right, again, I'm late. I'm going to wrap it up. But we will kick things off with the morning programming again here on Wednesday morning. Handicapper support at 9, Racing Across America at 10 a.m. as we will kick off Travers Week on Wednesday. So as far as this week, we'll wrap it up with the Sunday morning programming. Of course, you can watch all afternoon and evening all the great horse racing action. But as far as the morning programming, back in Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.